welcome to Keeping It True by You, LSU Tigers. Major time of the year where things go down. The time in between one intercollegiate year and the next always is filled with updates, but we will see something very special this year, and that is the implementation of the House settlement that was passed by Judge or approved by Judge Claudia Wilken. And this is now a new era of intercollegiate athletics, particularly focusing here on the channel, on this particular episode of Keeping It True by You, LSU Tigers, on those LSU Tigers. We covered them, what goes on campus, and everything around the program, giving you the most in-depth details about how this will be affecting the LSU Tigers. So to give some background, for those of you who may want to learn a little bit more about the House settlement, who may need some details that are being left out here or there, let me give you a breakdown of the core pieces. So the $2.8 billion number that you hear very often started with the House settlement is due to lawsuits that were placed, particularly by a swimmer whose last name was House. He and some other players, we won't mention them for reasons, put in their lawsuit, and it allowed players that participated from 2016, and it was finally determined through 2024, to be eligible for a portion of a $2.8 billion settlement regarding their lost potential to capitalize in NIL practices that did not get implemented within the time of their play. So effectively, that's going to be dispersed over a 10-year period. So you will see incremental payments coming from the NCAA, from the universities themselves, and that is where that money will be sourced and then distributed from. Of course, that includes players that we are very familiar with as LSU people. Joe Burrow, you think about, of course, in other capacities, Jaden Daniels in his time as Arizona State. You think about some of the many great players that came across, that 2019 time frame, even going all the way back to someone like Leonard Fournette, Jordan Jefferson, Jamar Chase, just all the names that kind of flood into your brain. Patrick Queen, let's give him a shout out here, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a local guy. All of those players would now be eligible for a portion of that $2.8 billion, which is significant, but the more significant thing is that this provided the nail in the coffin to amateurism in major intercollegiate athletics. So with this, you have $20.5 million provision that has now been carved out of every school's athletic budget if they so choose to use it, which is important. And there is a opt-in provision that has to be made known by June 15th. But the workings of it will not begin until July 1st. So you'll hear those two dates. June 15th is the opt-in date. July 1st is the implementation date. Important note there. And that $2.5 million will be used to fund basically school-derived NIL contracts is how you could determine it. So basically this would be in the case of LSU. They're going to distribute approximately $13.5 million to their football program, $2.7 million to their basketball program, $900,000 to women's basketball, and then $900,000 to all other sports with an additional $2.5 reserved for new students arriving to campus to basically replenish the fund year over year. And that is the general terms that were laid out in the agreement for how schools would or could or should distribute. It's not written in stone, but it's certainly a clear guideline that can be utilized. And, you know, without being Scott Woodward, you have to imagine that this is put in place in the capacity to both facilitate football while elevating the other sports on campus, because the only other revenue generating sport for LSU based on the 2023-2024 revenue reports is men's basketball. You may be surprised that was the year that LSU did accomplish many great things in, of course, a multitude of sports, gymnastics, baseball, women's basketball, all of them very good. All of them lost revenue. A deficit was on the sheet for them. And that is not uncommon. LSU, for a time period, was able to make a slight profit on their baseball operations. But now with the cost of operations where they are not close to doing that any longer. Which then brings in the next part of the House settlement, which is going to have an additional major impact, is that now full scholarships are provided. This is important. So in the case of football, this is one of the major catch points that made this ruling so delayed. It was expected that this could be done in June, early June, if not in May, as early as some people thought late April. But one of the major provisions that was debated and had to be deliberated upon, worked over, reconsidered, was that you have existing walk-ons on these football programs that effectively, as everybody learned what the situation was likely going to be, were told, unfortunately, I am now giving out full scholarships and you will not be receiving that. So it is no longer in the interest of the university. And this was not LSU exclusive. This was across major college football. You will be asked to leave whenever the House settlement begins. Now, Judge Claudia Wilkin did not care for that, did not find that to be just. So there is now a grandfather clause in place for these players, which will effectively allow them to be designated as designated student athletes, is what I believe the term will end up being. And this will essentially allow them to operate on the university for a given period of time, basically throughout their tenure as a walk-on, or what would have been a walk-on, they can exist. But once that tenure is over, they will now shift to roster limitations, effectively putting in a hard roster cap and a hard salary cap, creating a much more regulated, is the term we'll use, version of intercollegiate athletics. Now, to be fair, you always had scholarship limitations. That's how the NCAA was able to enact penalties and then weaken schools because they would cut their scholarships. What brings the new aspect to this is that this is all now going to be handled by a new entity which is being brought on, and that is, of course, the College Sports Commission. The NCAA will still exist within the realm of football, which is the main topic here. Within the realm of football, the NCAA will still exist. So it will essentially be there as a rules provider and as a eligibility determiner. So they will basically make sure the birth certificates are the birth certificates and that the time is kept on the field. Outside of that, enforcement of rules or anything of the sort has now been basically handed over to the new College Sports Commission, which will be CEO'd by Brian Seely. One of the major things he did recently, which I think many people had exposure to, was the Ohtani case, doing the investigation there. Has worked with the MLB for quite a while. This guy's coming into a very tumultuous instance in the sport. You have the college football playoff that will be expanding in 2027 to whatever degree, 2026 actually, to whatever degree that's determined. We obviously think right now it's a 16-team playoff, and whatever format that might be, that will be a major boost in revenue for these programs, particularly talking about LSU and the likes of the Power Four here. That will give them a huge kick up in revenue, particularly depending on how it ends up being negotiated with the automatic qualifiers or not. So given that, you now have that separated. Another thing that got separated due to this house settlement, which again, LSU is going to opt into, and schools have until June 15th to do that. You will hear opt-ins coming in this week. That is going to be a thing. And, you know, usually universities are preparing some sort of statement. And if you want to know more about universities in the state of Louisiana, take a moment. And I got a card up here that's talking about the other episode where we are keeping it true by you in Louisiana. I talk about Tulane, ULL, La Tech, and all the FCS programs as well. Don't forget about you, ULM. You're real too to us. You're real in our hearts. And we talk about what that impacts them like. But this episode, of course, the sister episode, talking about LSU exclusively, you talk about the newest element of how the big boys will get real big, but the big boys are also no longer able to operate without supervision. So Deloitte is going to establish, and Deloitte is going to effectively provide a service called NIL Go. Now, it will be managed by, of course, the College Sports Commission, but it will be operated and it will be created by Deloitte. And this is a clearinghouse. So effectively, if we at True Bayou Sports Media chose to give a NIL deal to a LSU athlete, that NIL deal, of course, if it was over $600, which is the purpose of this, but if it was over $600, it would need to go into NIL Go. They would then review the deal and say, wow, I think that True Bayou Sports Media does not need to pay insert player that amount of money. It is not a valid deal, and it will be disclosed and discarded. Or they'll say, wow, that's actually very generous. That's very realistic. It fits the market perfectly. You're all good to go. And that clearinghouse supposedly will keep a Wild West from forming on the NIL market. Now, look, I think someone like Garrett Nussmeier is still going to end up getting $2-plus million of NIL money. That's not a surprise. Bryce Underwood is probably still going to get the majority of his money that he was promised by Michigan, of course, which is why he is not here. LSU's war chest is not closing. It is opening wider, and that is something that I don't think people quite understand. They hear that, okay, they're now going to get paid by the school, and NIL is being regulated harder. This somehow means that there's now less money going into the sport. Quite the contrary. Quite the contrary. It is going to create a new set of what is honestly going to be an NIL war that wasn't like what we were familiar with. I think a lot about how NIL was handled in this first era. We'll call it the early era of NIL here. Someone like Livy Doon can come to LSU, get $5+ million of NIL money, be the highest paid NIL athlete at the school, yet somehow also there can be a backup at the University of Texas, Texas A&M, we'll call them either way, that can generate not similar but very disproportionate amounts of money compared to someone like a Livy Doon. So you think of her, you think of what she did in college, you see somebody who produced, you know, NIL values in the millions, yet somehow somebody can still produce a million as a backup football player, which is very interesting. Even if you want to take a look at, you know, Texas Tech and their softball player who's got a $1 million NIL deal. How is it proportionate? How does it stack up? And this is something that's not going to go to bed necessarily. If this clearinghouse tightens the ropes extremely hard, I think NIL changes very quickly, very quickly. It no longer becomes the thing that it was before, and you will see endorsements like never seen before. The production value on these endorsements will go through the roof. This isn't going to be somebody sitting down for a 10-minute podcast anymore and getting a $400,000 check. This person's going to be doing social media posts. The person's going to be working on the lot. The person's going to be doing everything because they're going to have to earn that money in a legitimate way. That is where things change. You saw Livy Doon go and do actual ads for these companies. I believe you think about the leggings brand and the athleisure wear brand. You think about what she was able to do with the we'll call it exclusive access site. I don't know too much about that one, but it was one that she had that was pretty lucrative. That type of thing will become more prevalent. The way how she got her NIL, which was with brand partnerships, working in a way that leveraged high value social media engagement, which is going to be very different than what we've seen for, again, backups that play three games at a major university and aren't really household names, but somehow are generating exceedingly in proportionate NIL values. To a degree, is this all balanced out? If, say, for instance, that same Texas school has a $16 million of the 20.5 portion allotted to their football program, and then somehow they manage to get every player still an additional $100,000 to $150,000 NIL deals. I don't know if it's that much different, but it will take longer to do, which we'll see if that works. You know, if that is able to tighten down some of that bidding war aspect, I think a lot of people are going to find that to be valuable. But I mentioned with purpose that LSU's war chest is getting opened. LSU is going to have to enhance what they've done on the field. They are not slowing down. And that's simply the fact that now we know that every SEC school, for the most part, is going to put the same amount of money into football. It's no longer a question. It's no longer in doubt. Is Vandy going to be able to produce the same NIL value as the Texas schools, as LSU? No, Vandy is going to come from their athletic department budget, which they have the same access to the media payout as every other SEC school, and they're going to go grab and give every player the same amount of money as the other schools. And that is a situation that was never cut and dry before. It was implied and it was understood, but it was never that simple. So now there is no inherent automatic way to just say we have the NIL money, we can make the deals, and we'll be fine. Now, you still have to run that side of the program to where, again, collectives aren't going away. Individual donations through NIL funding are not going away, nor is it to the athletic department. That's where LSU has an advantage with TAF being as well established as it is. All these other universities having to create funds, by the way, for this, particularly if you look at the smaller ones. LSU at TAF is basically already set up, and they've been set up for over 20 years. So to a degree, this puts us as LSU folk at an extreme advantage. We'll see if it plays out that way, but that's one thing that you have, at least in year one. But like I was saying, when it comes to trying to implement these things across school to school, I still don't think whenever you now have to have boosters of, say, Kentucky get into a shouting match, I want to give $8 million to basketball. No, I want to give $15 million to football. I want to give $8 million to basketball. No, you need to give $15 million to football, period, end of story. That's going to create interesting dynamics. You look at a school like Auburn that's had increasing basketball success while their football team is starting to weaken. Do they decide, hey, if I can go get better basketball recruits and guarantee that I'm in some national championship hunt, is that the route I want to go? I think a lot of national media made this out to be that, you know, you can only put the money in so many places, that if you aren't doing one, you can't do the other. And, you know, I think when it comes to something like the SEC, that's not as much a question. If we're talking maybe the lower ends of the Big 12, the lower ends of the ACC, I think Boston College might struggle a little bit for that, to be frank with you. I think, you know, somewhere like a Cincinnati may not have all the answers today. I think Houston has Tillman Fertitta and they're going to be fine, but, you know, just to name a couple schools off the top of my head. LSU has the war chest. LSU had the war chest to be competing beforehand, and they were already the revenue dominant program in the SEC. Now they are the NIL brand dominant program in the SEC. Nobody has the notoriety. Nobody has the fame, the cultural influence. The crossroads are still aligned in LSU's favor. but the leadership will have to come and the results in the new era will have to come. I don't think we're going to see the full effects of this, particularly when it comes to seeing your smaller sports and how they're impacted. Because I think it's important that Scott Woodward is putting a focus on Olympic sports, putting a focus on women's sports. That's very key. There are currently litigations out there trying to uphold the way how this ruling was favored, because they find that there's not enough protection for Title IX sports. And that is a legitimate argument to raise. And we'll talk about that again in just a moment here after I do appease the algorithm and remind you, don't forget to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Don't forget to hit the follow if you're over on TikTok. We, of course, appreciate the interaction and the comments that you've shared over the past few days. We've enjoyed reading them, particularly over on TikTok, a very hot platform right now for us. Do go over there, join the conversation. I enjoy working over, with anybody over on X as well. If you're on there, Instagram, we're there as always, and we appreciate your support wherever you find us on social media and however you choose to keep it true by you. And as we transition back into the episode, LSU is a big school and there's a big budget and there's a lot of revenue, $200 million revenue budget on a rough basis every year. Is $200 million, though, enough today to now increase the amount of scholarships for baseball by three, to increase the amount of scholarships for softball, again, by more than double? All of the roster limitation aspect from the House decision is one that is the major force on the small sports. You think about an average LSU tuition, room and board, so forth and so on. And then you can put that over 4 years. You put that into, say, a tennis athlete. If you were splitting, and I don't know the exact roster limitations previously for tennis, bear with me. Let's say you were splitting 10 scholarships previously, right? And now you're allowed 25. I don't know, again, the roster limitations. I apologize, they're not out yet. Just bear with me for the analogy. That's a major change in a already revenue negative sport. Now, obviously, there will be more money when this football playoff situation is figured out. There will be more money to go around. The revenue sharing goes up a minimum of 4% every year from the 20.5 in year one. So there's opportunity. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be there. But how will it be utilized? Is Scott Woodward going to say, I want to fund all of my sports all the way and continue to put more national championships into the Lawton room for LSU and say, we are the dominant, we will be the dominant, and there is no doubt? I think that could be the case. I don't see that being unrealistic, to be frank. I mean, if you're talking about an increase somewhere in the range of 10 to 15 million a year, you can garner that up from LSU's boosters. You have to remember, and I'm not going to get into the major details because there is certain aspects of privacy when it comes to great generosity and great donations. Gordon McKernan did an interview talking about his NIL efforts. Gordon McKernan said, you know, I've put in roughly speaking for him, approximately 6 million, I think the number was, since the NIL era began. And he knows he's not the number one guy. He knows he's not close to the number one guy. There are some very well-to-do people with connections to this university. And you see other schools like Penn State who have signed eight-figure agreements with what is frankly private equity firms. And it's known private equity firms. Of course, Florida State had some very intense conversations with private equity firms when they were trying harder to get out of the ACC. This is getting to the point, and this is a point that I think a lot of people don't care to hear about. And I'm going more into the speculative part here, so I know we keep it more journalistic, but I find that this is important when it comes to the idea of LSU keeping all their sports and fully funding them. These athletic departments are about to have to make some major concessions with the fact that they need more money and they need it fast. Particularly schools that have the players to do it. it's going to get interesting because there's nothing necessarily stopping somebody from saying, hey, I'm very invested in the school. I find the school to be incredibly, incredibly important to me and what I want to do, the legacy I want to live. If somebody said today, you know, I'll give you $20 million, I'll give you $40 million, at what point do we start to see ownership of athletic departments be put into question? Is it fully being funded by universities and small-scale donors? Or are we going to get into a world to where if, say, for instance, Arkansas wants to leverage Walmart, Tyson Foods, and the other major players they have in that Northwest Arkansas area and say, hey, I know we have the money. Let's go ahead and make it happen. And that means that in the future, every Arkansas jersey has a Walmart patch. Every Arkansas field has a Walmart logo on it. Every Arkansas piece of athletic equipment has a Walmart logo on it. I don't think that's unrealistic. You know, it would probably start with things like naming rights. It would start with things along the lines of on jersey sponsorships, on field sponsorships. And it's exactly what sounds so similar to what a degree this is now. Minor league sports. Minor league sports across the world are littered with more ads the further down the professional tree that you go. And it's something that a lot of American audiences weren't used to. We first saw it, of course, with the NBA. Now the MLB has adopted it. The NHL has them. The NFL is probably going to come to that point sooner or later. And it all points to the fact that there needs to be some dollars from somewhere. And these brands are increasingly becoming more valuable. You think about the fact that, again, LSU runs a revenue of $200 million a year on this athletic department. It's not exactly a one-for-one evaluation of value. You can look at Forbes for that. There is an article. And you even see the state of Louisiana starting to poke their nose into this. I talk about it more in detail on the episode of Keeping It True by You in Louisiana at the end of the episode. But House Bill 639, which is on pace to be signed by the governor and put into law, raised the sports betting tax from 15 to 21.5% with provisions for $20 million of the new revenue to be split amongst the 10 public universities in the state of Louisiana. So as of right now, inherently, the money from the state of Louisiana that's in play by the LSU Tigers just went up by almost $2 million. Very small drop in the bucket for a school of LSU size, but it's not a small drop in the bucket when you look program by program, and some of your better performing revenue losers that are in a deficit are only down by about $1.3 million. So when it comes to the idea of who's going to keep the small sports alive, who's going to make sure that all of them continue to be competitive, it's coming from new sources that we've never seen before. In the case of LSU, part of it will be coming from the fact that every time you place a bet, you're contributing to the LSU Tigers. And in my personal take, I think that they should reopen individual player props and all of the other aspects of college sports betting that were removed during the Kayshawn Boutte incident. Just an idea if you really want to keep the programs competitive. Beyond that, antidote, you still have all the other sports, and they're all deeply in the hole right now. And look, I don't think we're ever going to get to a point to where certain non-revenue generators get every single player full scholarship, no doubts. You know, I don't know if we'll get to that point. It certainly won't be in year one. It may not be year five. It may not be ever. But until essentially all student athletes are considered employees of the university. We're still going to operate in a gray area. We're still going to operate in a position that is not clear what the future is. Until that collective bargaining aspect comes into it, it will have to go through some type of litigation. Again, there are efforts to curtail it and not need to go to that, but we have to ask the question, can, you know, what is not really, I'm going to say what something that's not really fleshed out fully yet, which is, of course, can the College Sports Commission manage it? I'm excited to see what they do. I don't know yet. I don't claim to know yet, but I think the College Sports Commission has a very tall task in front of it. And honestly, a lot of people will claim that this is the death of college sports, that this is the end. Oh, you know, boo-hoo, where do we go from here? I think it's a bit different if you look at this from a sports fan. If you look at this from the perspective of somebody who looks at what we have in American professional sports, and particularly non-American professional sports. The closest thing you might be familiar with in American professional sports would be something along the lines of AAA baseball. It's nowhere near what you see in the reality of something along the lines of a European second division soccer club. It's very different. You're trending closer to that European soccer club territory, to where there will be a pyramid, and the difference between Power 4, Group of 5, FCS, Division 2, Division 3, there might be more levels being put into that pyramid. You could see now to where it might just be, you know, Power 4, where you have all sports go, all, you know, money being distributed of the 20.5, and that's one layer. Then a new layer opens where you have where your Group of Five sat. I think that could fracture in two. Full funded Group of Five and non-full funded Group of Five. A school like Tulane, as I talked about, is in a great position to be a full funded Group of Five. A school like ULM is very far away from being even able to fully commit to the $20.5 million, much less funding any other athletic department close to that, any other athletic program close to that 20.5, or anything to where their full roster limitations, basically no shot. Then you look at the FCS programs, the ones along the lines of, at least locally, we think Southeastern with baseball, we think McNeese with basketball, we think even a UNO with baseball to a degree. Those are now going to become probably single sport, dual sport, maybe three sport schools where they go hog wild on their favorites and they say, you know, we're going to do the best with the rest of you because it's a major expense on the sheet. And we'll see where it comes. You know, it's a new era. Personally, I'm excited. Of course, we're getting close to July at the time of recording. And for those of you who have a little bit of a programming question, where is the LSU baseball coverage? You will see that on Keeping It True By You Primetime. I'm sorry, no, not Keeping It True By You Primetime, True By You Sports Media Primetime. And we'll have that coming out this weekend, getting you ready for LSU Arkansas. But beyond that, new era of college sports. I'm excited about it. I'll give you every step along the way that I can on Keeping It True By You LSU Tigers. Thank you all for watching, and I appreciate you. I'll see you on the next episode. Thanks, everyone. This has been a True By You Media production. This show is for entertainment purposes only and does not render legal or financial advice. Remember to bet responsibly. Distribution of this podcast is prohibited without the express written consent of True By You Media or its subsidiaries. Thanks for being true by us. We can't wait until next time we keep it true by you.